This is a really, really good episode of the podcast. You guys can really get a lot out of this. You have to listen to the entire thing. The ending is really, really, really important. You're not going to get the full effect of the ending unless you listen to the entire thing all the way through.
Now tuned into the motherfucking greatest.
Welcome to the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. Your weekly look inside Iowa State, the sports scene, pop culture, and...
You know what? Forget this. When's the last time these guys ever stayed on topic?
About anything. The Cyclone Fanatic Podcast is powered by Charterhouse Real Estate. Charterhouse Real Estate is real estate redefined. Learn more about Charterhouse Real Estate on the forums of Cyclone Fanatic or charterhouseiowa.com.
It's a new beginning.
And now, please welcome your hosts, Chris Williams.
Are you not aware that I get farty and bloated with a foamy latte?
My mistake, Shackleton.
Your mistake indeed.
Mark Charter.
Because only one thing counts in this life. Get them to sign on the line which is dotted. A always B B C closing. Always be closing.
And Adam Gradham.
There is one person in every group of friends that nobody f***ing likes.
Hey guys, what's going on? Happy Thursday. It's the final podcast of the off season. It's kind of always the off season here though, Mark. Right?
If I had my way, it would be. Yeah. I like the off season talk. But I'm excited for the season coming up. I really am. Like I've said many times, I've never been more excited for an upcoming 4-win season. And I mean that sincerely.
You've already put the pressure on Matt Campbell to win 9 games this season or else.
Change coaches again.
You're going to... No.
He gets a pass. He gets a pass
after clones lose to Iowa, you're going to tweet at Pollard. It's time.
No, I'm already banned. What's he going to do? Ban me again?
He hasn't brought you back yet.
I haven't asked. Meanwhile, he's taking photos with my brother outside Journey concerts. They're good friends, apparently, but I'm banned.
Your brother's way more of a troll than you are.
I know, but Pollard likes him for some reason. I think it's because he tweets about Iowa State track all the time. He's the only guy in the universe that tweets about Iowa State track, so Pollard loves him.
He's literally the only fan who cares about track.
That's true.
You're right.
That is true. But Pollard's embraced him at this
Pollard
point.
Pollard loves track because that's his thing, and his kid does it. I totally understand.
No, I agree.
If I had a kid who ran track, I'd be all into it as well.
I agree.
Special guest. Okay, so here's the deal. We're full disclosure here on the podcast. We don't make things up. We have a busted headset that would be the fourth headset. So I went to get out the old trusty stick mic today.
Oh, yeah.
And the stick mic, the male end that goes into the female part of the stick mic, is non-existent. It's existent.
It's not working.
He just can't get it up.
Exactly.
So we're going to play like pass the headset today between me and Gray because we have a special guest here, the great Lane Danielson.
Lane is more worthy of a microphone than Adam Gray is.
Lane's a humble guy. He's not going to like that, building him up like that.
No, I don't like the word great in front of that.
Legendary.
It's good to be here.
That makes you sound old, though, if I call you legendary.
Well, I am getting old.
It's exciting. I don't know if we've ever had a better athlete on here, you know, than Lane Danielson.
We had the golfer.
John Olson.
Yeah. Charter, you're better at
it. I'd compare my high school days to Lane's days. I think we could have gone head to head.
Lane, if you and Charter.
He went a little bit further in life than I did.
If you guys were to go out into the parking lot and run a foot race, who would win?
I bet I could beat him today because he's wearing like wingtips and pleated pants. I've got jeans and tennies on.
I'll take that bet.
Ooh.
I'll take the shoes off.
Can we do like a 20 yard so I don't get tired? Oh, that'd be a good race.
When's the last time you like actually 20. Worked out, Mark?
Like an actual went to the gym workout?
Yeah.
It's probably been at least 3 years.
Yeah.
Probably. Since then.
I've seen Lane get after it over at Whitford's gym. Lane gets after it still.
Lane could kick my ass. There's no question about that. I'm not disputing that. But for a 37-year-old that never works out and never runs, I could get through the parking lot okay.
You're doing pretty good.
Yeah,
without being in gym for 3 years.
What's it like being Charter's neighbor? Like, do you want him to move already?
Well, we haven't had to. No, it's been good. I think he might be wanting us to move with my four kids.
He's got a brood over there, man. He does. He does.
We went on a 10-day vacation. How long have you lived there? A month?
About, yeah, roughly in there.
So it's been a 10-day hiatus we took in there, but it's been good so far. He's got a son that is similar age to my 5-year-old son, who now thinks that Seton is his best friend.
They're besties. I went down.
After 1 hour, they were best friends.
They were. It happens quick at 5. I went down. They were down playing in our basement the other day, and I went down there and I didn't see him. And then Seton's bedroom door was closed, and I opened that up quietly because I wanted to see what 5-year-olds are doing, you know. And they had the iPad out, and they were underneath the covers together, laying side by side in Seton's bed, watching some cartoon. That's what you do.
At least they're watching a cartoon.
You don't worry about them at 5. They don't really watch bad stuff at 5, I don't think. They don't even know to look for bad stuff. Yeah. They're just like, find I think it was Goosebumps, which is actually probably too scary for my kid.
It's someday that'll happen, though, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Where the boys are having a sleepover.
You're right, man.
Fire up the iPad.
They're not looking for Goosebumps anymore. They're looking for something else. So I have to totally... She's going to kill me, too, but this is what we do on the podcast.
We often put our marriages at risk.
I'm going to do it right now.
Okay.
By the way. So it's
get
well
prepared, Lane.
It's well documented. Lane doesn't even know this, by the way. So it's well documented in my own household, and this has been the case since. Lane, when you stopped playing in 2003.
Yep.
We're going to talk about that. So going back to 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003.
It's one of the worst teams in Iowa State history.
We're going to talk about it for sure. So,
that's
so
saying something.
So it's well known. It's well known going back, and I've been with my wife forever, but going way back to when Lane was playing, and probably someone after, that my wife declared a crush on Lane Danielson. Big time. Big time.
Well, now that
like the
now
all
that their neighbors,
so,
perhaps,
so like
fantasy.
Like the All-American looks, all of that crap, right? So fast forward to almost a year ago now, whenever we first saw this house that we now live in, and I was telling her, you need to come look at this house because we might buy this instead of build.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't know, blah, 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 blah. And I said to her specifically to get her to look at it, I said, Lane Danielson lives 2 doors away. And she lit up like a Christmas tree.
Kind of like Lane's
with most
face
people
right
at her, the property value.
She totally, lit up like a Christmas tree. So now it's just become the joke. Like I'll be like, Lane's out mowing his yard, you know, in case you want to go take a look or something. So,
Do you mow the yard with your shirt off, Wayne?
No need to be nervous, Lane.
Maybe seven or eight years ago, I would.
But my wife was, she was a looking and she was a liking. So, welcome us to the neighborhood.
If we couldn't make Lane feel more uncomfortable.
There we go.
In the first.
That's what we do here. And by the way, my wife is going to be so mad at me when she hears this, but it's okay.
Because you came on here that one time about how she had the sex dream about me.
I did. Yeah.
Like you're always throwing her under the bus.
Yeah, but you know, she's still married to me, so.
Well,
it's all good. She knows with me, you expect the unexpected.
I want to start, I'm going to hand the headset over to Gray here for a while. But we were just kind of getting touched on this, and we'll talk Iowa State football too. But this fascinates me because Lane, I was trying to get a Lane Danielson Minnesota Vikings jersey for the basement, which Lane told me that it's not possible. I bet I could go personalize one.
For sure.
We'll have to do that.
For sure.
And you told me, I didn't realize that you were on the Vikings team, the practice team, the same time as Brock Lesnar.
Yep.
That's fascinating to me.
Yeah, it was interesting. I signed with them as undrafted free agent. It would have been the 2004 season. Signed with them in May after the draft.
Yeah.
And it was... Brock Lesnar kind of stole the show. He was the free agent. You know, he left the...
I remember all the ESPN cameras and stuff following Lesnar around because he had just been like the WWE champion and he like quit that to go there. It was a huge story.
It was interesting because there would be like 200 or 300 WWE diehard fans that know nothing about football and they're there.
And they're nerds, man.
I mean, that was the Moss Culpepper days, and there'd be more people there to get Brock Lesnar's autograph than Randy Moss. And Lesnar was not making the team. It was pretty apparent early. I mean, he was...
So how did it not translate, though? Huge guy, obviously athletic, you know?
There's a lot of technique in
football. Defensive line, though, is kind of like you're just a run clogger in a certain way. Get in the way. Don't let him, you know, create a hole. He wasn't good at that?
He was a little stiff. If you look across the NFL at the D tackles and those guys can run and he was strong and athletic from a wrestling fighting perspective, but I just think it had been way too long since he had played the game of football.
So that summer, were you taking reps with like Jake Reed, Chris Carter, Randy Moss? Like
Chris Carter was gone.
Oh, he was already out. Yep.
Nate Burleson would have been his second year. The quarterbacks was Culpepper. Gus Frerotte was the backup. Mm-hmm. And my man, Sean Hill, was the third string quarterback.
Sean Hill's your man.
He's still up there.
He's their backup now.
Yeah, he's the backup.
Yeah, he started last week because Teddy was out with the leg injury.
How long of a career has he had now?
Jeez.
Long time.
He was there 2 or 3 years before I got there.
Wow.
And he was from Kansas. He was a JUCO guy, went to Maryland, and barely made the NFL and has just stuck around and been.
Because he actually started a game against the Vikings for the Rams after Sam Bradford got hurt for like the 10th time 2 years ago as a season opener.
He has been with, I think he is, don't quote me on this, but he started with the Niners. He has started with the Rams. He has started with the Lions.
Wow.
What's crazy to me is
he's the only Viking that I played with.
Gray's
still with him.
Stat checking over here. If you're competitive, it would suck. And I guarantee you, if you're in the NFL, you're competitive. But is there any better place to be than a journeyman backup quarterback in the NFL that just sticks around and gets paid and gets paid and gets paid?
Maybe to be a punter. Maybe to be a punter. I don't know. But they
a punter. Yeah. So, he asked a good question. Were you taking reps? Like with Randy Moss and those guys?
I never was. I know. Yeah, I did take some reps with
I didn't know. Did Randy Moss give you like time of day?
I was close to making that team. I ran mostly with the threes, sometimes with the twos. They were loaded at receiver. I probably picked the wrong team to sign with. I could have went to 5 or 6 different teams. Mm-hmm. They had Randy Moss. They just signed Marcus Robinson from the Bears. Nate Burleson was their third receiver. And then there was like 7 or 8 of us guys fighting for the 4th and 5th spot.
Yeah.
Which is, it's competitive.
Were you working out with special teams though too?
Yep. That's kind of why they signed me. I was going to be a special teams.
Yeah.
Guy, Chris Walsh.
Yeah.
They kind of labeled me that I had the opportunity to be the next Chris Walsh, but I tell people I wasn't quite as crazy as Chris Walsh.
The token white receiver that they just throw out there.
Chris Walsh was like I think when he retired, he's like the all-time leading special teams tackler.
Wow, was he
within
really?
Within the Vikings, and he was nuts. At that time, I was 23, and he was like 34, and he had just retired.
Wow.
And he could barely stand for more than like 20 minutes because his knees and ankles and hips were so bad at the age of 33, 34.
Jeez. You don't think of Chris Walsh. You don't think of crazy. You think of – I think of the guy when I was playing Madden. You know, you do the 5 wideouts and he's dumb. Yeah. Was David Palmer on that team?
No.
Or was he out before then?
Okay. He was not on that team.
Okay. Do you remember – he was a Bear. I'm a Bears fan. Tom Waddle. Do you remember that wide receiver? Like any white – wide receiver that's not super tall is like that. You're Tom Waddle. You get beat up, you know, you play where they need you to play.
You're all like good route runners. You're scrappy. Trying to think of all the
that's never been said of a black wide receiver in league history. He's a good route runner.
Possession receiver. Yeah.
Possession receiver.
You could run a 4.3, but if you're white, you're possession.
So after that happened, career ended after.
Yep. I had a little bit of a stint with the Tennessee Titans on their practice squad. I was down there with Steve McNair, but just a couple of years. And I could kind of see the writing on the wall that I probably wasn't good enough to make it and stay. I'd missed my window there, and I gave it a good run and had a good job opportunity back here in Des Moines. Went in and told Coach Mike Tice, who at that time was the head coach, and I said, hey, I got a really good job opportunity back in Des Moines. My heart's not in this as much anymore, as it needs to be to make this team, because they wanted me to come back the next year to camp. And I left, got a job, and been living in here in Ankeny pretty much since.
Was he supportive, or did he call you a pussy?
Oh, he understood.
Okay.
Just he was curious. Probably thinking in his mind that, you know, it's a grind. The NFL is a grind. And once you're in it, you see those guys that are starting, the superstars, they're making it great. But there is 25, 30 fringe guys on every team that it is a grind. They're living in hotels year round. Mm-hmm. They're not with their family. They're not making millions of dollars. They're making good money. Mm-hmm. $300,000, $400,000, $600,000.
Yep.
But it's a stressful, very, you know, a lot of the coaches from my vantage point, guy trying to make the team, the coaches, they know it's a tough business. Yeah. They might have to cut you that afternoon. So it's hard to get in deep from my perspective.
So my perspective from NFL football, like everyone else that's listening to this, is hard knocks, frankly, right? The training camp. It sounds like you kind of went in and quit. You didn't get cut, per se.
Well, I was cut.
How did that happen for you?
First camp, I made it to final cuts. There was started like 10 or 11 wide receivers in camp, and those would come and go. Like,
yeah,
they'd bring a guy in, he'd be there for 2 weeks, and he's gone. Mm-hmm. And I made it all the way to final cuts, played in all 4 preseason games, and there was 6 of us, and we thought we were competing. So me, the 5th and the 6th guy, we thought we were competing for the 5th spot.
Mm-hmm.
And an old lineman happened to get hurt in the 4th preseason game at Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And so they end up only keeping 4, so they cut us both.
Brutal.
They almost kept.
So that could have been it, though. That could have been your break.
It could have been it. It's NFL, you have to get the right team, especially as a free agent. It's like a walk-on. You have to get the right team, right time, right opportunity. But the difference in the NFL is you can't redshirt and chill for a couple of years.
Yeah.
You got to make the team now, it's a tough business.
So when you got cut, was it some equipment manager coming and saying, hey, come with me and grab your playbook?
The team meeting the next morning after our final preseason game, one of the graduate assistants, or they don't call them graduate assistants, but one of the assistant coaches comes and is like, hey, coach wants to talk to you, and they bring in the office, just like the hard knocks. It's almost, hey, it's not a personal thing. You did a great job for us. We really liked you a lot.
Yep.
But, it's a business, unfortunately, and good luck to you. Leave your playbook. See ya.
Wow. that's got a sting, though.
Yeah. Mark, it's kind of perverse that we've got one of the best wide receivers in Iowa State history, and all we've talked to him about is getting cut in the NFL.
So you want to talk about his best season at Iowa State?
Well, I think we need to talk about the glory years a little bit. We can't just...
2001? 2000?
Yeah, I mean, that's like the golden era of Iowa State football.
All right, so let's go back in time. So you did walk on at Iowa State. What I'm curious about before we get to the glory years was when and how did your scholarship come about? Because that's typically kind of an exciting time for players that walked on. How was that done?
I was a preferred walk-on. Going back to my senior year at Dyke New Hartford High School, my recruiting visit consisted of my head coach, Tom Wilson, who's now at West Des Moines Dowling, and I, on a Saturday afternoon, went to the football offices and met with Mike Woodley.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't meet Coach McCarney really until the summer.
Yep.
But I walked on. Mike Woodley basically got me in the 105 as a preferred walk-on. And that first – kind of grinded that first year on the scout team, that first spring, worked my way into the 2-deep and somehow made a few plays that first spring, which would have been the spring of 2000, before the 2000 season. And then J.J. Moses, I was running the slot. J.J. Moses was the starter. And with the 1 or 2 practices to go plus the spring game, J.J. Twisted his ankle. So I got all of a sudden I'm walk on. I'm running with the ones and against one defense. And Sage and Blast from the Past here, Derek Walker. Sage and D-Walk were battling for the Sage at this 99, they battled. 2000, Sage was starter. So all of a sudden I'm running with the ones as a walk-on. And I actually ran with the ones in the spring game because J.J. sat out the spring game. But once I worked my way in the 2-deep, Jordan Carsons and I both were walk-ons. And we both worked our way in the 2-deep that first spring. And McCarney brought us both in. McCarney always gave scholarships he announced the scholarships at the team meeting. Mm-hmm. It was always a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And he would, give a scholarship to a senior, and then he gave a scholarship to Jordan and I as freshmen, which was one of the most amazing times of my life.
How did Mac do it? Like, nowadays, they'll, videotape everything, and we could see it.
You're right.
Do you remember, how he did it?
Oh, he would just come in and give a brief intro about each player, and then he'd bring you up, and the whole team would just erupt. And it was back in the Jacobson up on the second floor that we'd all jam in there. It was nice and
in the auditorium.
Yeah,
area.
Yeah.
Did you shed a tear when it happened?
I don't think I did shed a tear, but I remember signing my scholarship contract. My mom was there.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my last memories of my mom. My mom passed away not too much after that. So it was, I still have the picture of myself signing that, my mom and Coach McCarney in the background.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Nice memory. So Talk about the good or the bad first.
The good.
Okay.
there really isn't any.
Gray needs a mic.
I'm going to give Adam Gray the headset now if you guys hear something.
All right. I'm going to let Gray lead this because he's the stats geek over here.
Uh-oh. Has he been stat checking everything I've said so far?
Yeah, and you've been doing a good job. You've got a great memory. Well, I figured I needed to be the one asking him about the glory days because back in 2000, 2001, Williams was a big Hawkeye fan. So he doesn't know squat about Iowa State or you from back in those days. So my big question here is, do you ever look back? I mean, you were the all-time, when you left, you were the all-time leading in both yards and receptions at Iowa State. Question number one, when you were in 2003, Todd Blythe was redshirting.
Yep.
Did you know Todd Blythe was going to be as good as he ended up being?
I did.
You did?
Yep. In fact, he probably should have played in 2003.
They shouldn't have redshirted him?
We could have used him.
That wouldn't help. It wouldn't help.
You know, who would have thrown the ball?
You know, I actually hosted Todd Blythe on his official visit. And
okay.
Todd was a good recruit for us.
Yeah.
He had offers from Iowa and Kansas State. A little different coming out of Indianola than me coming out of Dyke. Todd had it all. I mean, he's 6'5" and could jump and run and soft hands. He shredded our scout team defense, or our defense on the scout team offense, excuse me. So Todd, I knew he was going to have a great career.
Now, with that said, he beat you by 13 catches all
time. Is that what it is?
Interceptions. But you only got 5 your freshman year. Do you look back and say, you know what, if they would have thrown me the ball a little more, I should be top of the list? Were you a little pissed off? Were you hoping that he didn't break your record?
No, I'm happy for Todd. I really am. Records are made to be broken. And, you know, it's that freshman year, I think I might have had 8 catches. I had 3 in the
inside. 5 is what I saw for you.
But I had 3 in the inside duck combo.
Boom.
Oh, okay.
Let's check Lane's ego here.
I might be wrong on that. I thought I had 8 catches that year because I had 3 in the inside duck combo.
It might not. Yeah, where I'm looking at might not be counting the bowl game here for you.
Lane, do you actually know how many yards you ended your career with at Iowa State? I'm looking right at it. I'm just curious if you know or even close.
I don't. I know that I broke the record in the Ohio game, which would have been the second game of 2003.
So you broke Tracy Henderson's record.
And Tracy held the records from like 1985 era.
84, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Remember that Tracy Ellis put on that guy in that game?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He would have been ejected for that.
Oh, yeah.
you ended your career with 2,690 yards.
I was going to say like 2,500.
Yeah, so Todd got you by just a little bit there.
Do you you think that Lazard's got a chance of breaking Blythe's record this year?
Where's he at?
I think he's got like, if he gets 76 catches this year, he breaks Blythe's record for receptions.
Career.
He's got 101 right now.
Yeah, he's not even in the top 10 going into this season.
Yeah, but he'll pass a lot this year if he has 40 or 50 catches, probably.
He had, I think, 56 last year in 11 games, so... It's pretty impressive, though.
I need to prepare myself for being number 3 here.
You might.
Mm-hmm. Now, one play I always remember about you, and it gets kind of overlooked a little bit because it was during the Texas Tech game. Everyone likes to remember the run, you know, that Seneca had against Texas Tech. But you had a pretty nice play yourself in that game.
Yep. Thanks to Seneca's option, he brought a little bit of attention with him. It was a reverse.
What you're talking about? The option reverse. And you went, 70 yards on that?
Somewhere on there, 70 or 80.
I think I just saw two. It's one of the longest rushing plays in Iowa State history.
Nice.
I mean, I'm clicking on your name and looking through the historic facts here, and his name comes up like 800 times on Iowa State's history sheet here. But
yeah, that was it. My boy Jack was out there lead blocking for me on that play. It's a lot of people bring that up to me because I think if you YouTube it, it's on YouTube.
Yeah.
Maybe the only thing I have on YouTube.
That was a great game. Do you have a certain play that kind of stands out to you as being maybe your favorite play?
That's a good question. a very memorable play that has nothing to do with playing the position of wide receiver or even offense. In 2002, I got which is, I think, our most memorable win. Winning in Iowa City.
Yeah.
I remember getting the onside kick because they were coming back in a big way.
Yeah.
And that kind of sealed the victory for us. That was just such a big win for us.
2002 was the game you guys won 36-31?
Yep.
I was at that game. It was crazy because it was a night game.
In 2000, probably my most significant catch there was at Oklahoma State when with 18 seconds to go, I had the game-winning touchdown catch.
Oh, yeah.
From Sage.
Yep.
Which that game, that was back in the day when games weren't on TV.
I remember listening to it and going crazy.
My family was on, back in Iowa, listening to the game on the radio. My grandparents were there, but that was about it.
How many games did you guys win that year?
Nine.
And that was the big nine. Okay.
Yep. That was, and that was outside of Kansas. It might have been, it was one of Mac's first significant road conference wins.
Okay.
In 2000.
There weren't a ton of those, but hey, I did find a stat. He's still number one in here. 100-yard receiving games. You're tied, but you are number one. Eight.
All right.
800-yard receiving games.
I think I have yards in a season as well. Receiving yards in a season in 2002.
I think you had over 1,000. 1,000, yeah. I saw that too.
We did play 14 games that year.
Yes,
which
did.
Helps.
Did you really? Oh, with the bowl. That counted.
Well, the Florida State game.
Yep.
Plus a bowl.
Are you still pissed off about that? Do you think he – I mean, he was clearly in.
It would have been nice to have review, for sure.
Yeah.
We would have still had to go for two.
Which
we were down eight.
I think you're down seven, and he was going to go for two just to win the game.
I thought we would have had to score. I thought the final score was 38-30.
You could be right on that one. Yeah.
And we would have had to get that touchdown plus go for two.
Yeah.
The play call was
the option.
The speed option against the fastest defense in the country at that time.
That was a fun game. And then you guys came back. You guys had a lot of good games. Beat Iowa, who only lost Iowa had all year until they went to the bowl game.
Yep.
And you guys really started that season really well.
Yep.
What kind of went south for you towards the end of the year?
Oh, probably at Norman, Oklahoma. We're ranked number nine. They were number two. Prior to that game, nobody was blitzing Seneca. So Bob Stoops decided, you know what, we're going to blitz the heck out of Seneca. We're going to get the ball out of his hand.
Yeah.
And they were bringing two guys off the edge. They'd blitz two guys off our weak side. And we did not adjust. And then from then on, we didn't have a strong running game that year.
No.
If you remember, we were not running the ball like we did in 2000 and 2001. And it was a tough schedule.
Backs that year were Wagner and
Hiawatha. Yep.
Okay.
Good solid backs.
Hiawatha.
Wagner, how tall was Wagner?
He was short.
He was like 5'5", wasn't he, Wagner?
Yeah, he was probably 5'7".
He was tiny.
Yeah.
Where was the toughest place to play at, in your opinion? Big 12, obviously you went on a couple road trips.
I've only played at Oklahoma once, and that one stands out. I don't know what our record is down there, the Cyclones all time in Norman.
Not good.
I won't be looking that one up.
The Huskers, Nebraska was tough as well. And, you know, give it to the Hawks. Kinnick is a loud, intense environment.
Yeah.
And those fans are on top of you. There's no gap.
Yeah.
You know,
I like that
when
about
you sit on the
place,
visiting
though.
Bench in Kinnick, the visiting fans can literally touch you.
Yeah.
They're right there. You can high five them very easily.
Which can be intimidating.
It's just they're on top of you. And it is what it is. I would say, my favorite stadium I played in was probably at College Station. I loved going down to A&M. And at Texas is not hostile. None of those Texas schools, I don't ever recall them being hostile. Texas Tech, they're kind of, I would say, a little rude. And, they were.
Texas' stadium, too. I've gone to a game down there. Is old. Like, I thought it was kind of crappy. You know, I know they probably made some improvements since I've been there, but I wasn't impressed by the stadium itself. Not that you guys cared about that. You're actually on the field. But with Bevo running around, you know. So, because we want to preview the upcoming season, that's part of why he's here. We can't do that unless we recap real quick 2003. So I got a couple impressive statistics that I want to ask him about here from 2003.
Just to be clear, you're the one going 2003, not me.
But you want to.
Just
admit
it. It's a part of my resume.
So the first thing that I was quite impressed with was your kicker that year, because Iowa State's always known for when it's time for an extra point, fans in the stands cringe. We've been doing that for a long time, right? Your kicker, Beneke, 18 for 18 that year out of extra points.
18 touchdowns is all you scored the entire year?
18 for 18.
What?
Yeah. Not a lot of touchdowns.
See how he takes a positive and just turns it into a negative?
That's a crazy stat.
Plus a 75% field goal percentage, Beneke, which also wasn't bad.
Adam Beneke was a good kicker for us.
He was a walk-on too, wasn't he?
I think Adam Beneke was first team all Big 12.
Well, 18 for 18, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, I think he was first team all Big 12, which is kind of hard to do.
So here's the two things that stuck out in somewhat of a miserable season. Sorry, man. I just can't resist. The first one was that and we like to talk about betting on this podcast.
Yep.
Against the spread that year, Iowa State covered the spread 9% of the time. You guys went 1-10 against the spread, which was worst in the country. You tied with Illinois for the least amount of covers.
We played 12 games
that year.
I don't know how we can go 1-11.
It's probably 1-11. Probably. Then. It wasn't good. You covered one time.
Where did you find the stat?
Google, my friend. Google. 1-11 then. 9%. Does that sound like 9%? Probably.
Yes.
So that itself was bad. But then more interesting to me is, and I need an explanation for this. I texted you this morning. You had 9 rushes that season for 15 yards. What in the world was going on with the rushing game?
I don't know. Well,
were those all reverses?
Probably. Yep.
That's a 1.7 yard average for those wondering at home.
I remember one versus Texas where it was a touchdown, but it was like a 1 yard touchdown run, so that helps me a little bit there. Otherwise, go ahead, Chris.
Didn't you against Missouri like house the opening kickoff or something? That was the game Wade Terry got hurt.
No, yep. That was a 7-yard touchdown pass from Wade Terry at the end of the half.
Yeah. In our something big happened and we got up 7-0.
2-minute offense. Right before the half, we scored a touchdown, and I was running a streak up the hash, and Wade Terry just threw the ball, and it should have been picked off. The safety missed it, and I happened to catch it and run in for a touchdown.
I was at that game. For some reason, I traveled to Columbia.
Last game.
Yeah, it was.
Wade Terry was only at Iowa State for 1 year, wasn't he?
But
he might have been there a couple of years.
He got hurt really bad that
game. Was it a neck injury or something?
Yep.
Yeah.
He got – it was serious injury.
Isn't Way, still around here? Like, I swear somebody said he was, selling cars in West Des Moines or something.
I think you're right. Last I heard it, it's been a while since I've heard that, though.
I need to try and get him on the podcast. You, that 2003 season, though, I always felt bad. Just because you guys, you had a lot of good young talent on the team, but that was the problem. Like, everything was so young.
Yep.
And, I mean, you saw it the next year, that team really jumped because those guys used that experience and were able to.
That's right.
Propel with it. But, man, that was just you had a freshman quarterback, you had a true freshman left tackle, you had a freshman running back, was Stevie the next year?
I think Aaron Brandt might have been a true freshman.
Yeah, he was a true freshman. Who was your running? Because Hiawatha went down.
Stevie Hicks.
Yeah, Stevie. Yeah,
Stevie would have been a freshman.
And I always did feel for guys like you, in that team, and Tony Elk even, and just guys who have been around during the glory years, because it was a tough spot because you really didn't have a chance to win many games. However, you guys were still in a leadership position where you're trying to put these guys under your wing.
And we had a unique class where we came in and we actually had a pretty good class that played a lot of guys that played a lot of winning football for Iowa State. And we got to our senior year and just couldn't get a break to go our way. I was telling Gray and Charter this in my driveway. I think we played 7 or maybe even 8 teams that finished the year with 10 wins that season.
That's insane.
So
I doubt that's ever happened before.
It was a lot. I mean, like you and I, Iowa, K-State, Oklahoma. I mean,
Northern Illinois.
We had to play at Northern Illinois versus Michael Turner, the burner.
Yeah.
And Hiawatha blew his knee out. Jordan Carson's hurt his knee, so he played the rest of the season on one leg. And he had he made an active roster, played in the NFL, but he should have been a third, fourth round pick, and mm-hmm. he played his entire senior year on one leg.
Another thing I think about with your era, and it's not a positive thing, just how many guys we've lost. Mm-hmm. Like it's from Chris Love to, because he was on those teams, and then Hiawatha, and there's so many guys. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Stevie.
The amount of guys that from my era that have passed away. It's especially a lot of the running backs.
Yeah.
Stevie Hicks and Ennis Haywood.
Yep.
And Hiawatha Rutland.
Yeah. I loved Hiawatha.
No doubt.
Because I went to school with him for a couple, and he was doing, that was like during when he was doing stand-up comedy.
Oh, yeah.
And we would, Legends, the bar that was up top there? I remember one night going to watch Hiawatha do stand-up comedy. And we just sat around having beers with him until 2-3 in the morning. I loved that guy. He had a zest for life.
Oh, he did. And I remember the first day I met the guy is, first day of fresh. Back in the day, we used to have freshman camp. The freshmen would come in and practice for 3 or 4 days before the the varsity guys or the veterans would come back and join you. And Hiawatha was just the center of attention at all times. And as a fresh walk-on freshman, you're like, please don't pick on me. Please don't pick on me. Because once he found somebody to pick on, he would just run with it for a long time. But.
What do you – I know that you're involved with some of the stuff that Matt Campbell's doing.
Yep.
What's your impressions been of these guys?
I love them. I love Coach Campbell.
Everybody says that. I haven't heard one person with a negative review yet.
I just love the culture that he's instilling. He knows how to win. He's been a part of multiple successful winning programs. And I love that he does whatever it takes. If there's any little thing that he can do, he will do it. And he's not prideful about it. Like, we're not going to do that here. He just, I mean, if it's a social media thing, if it is going the extra step with former players, he's trying to build a winning culture at Iowa State. And I always tell people that when he first showed up, he, and to this day, he doesn't want to hear that you can't win at Iowa State. He doesn't believe that you can't win at Iowa State. He truly believes that. Uh-huh. Like, when he says he called his wife when they played here a few years ago, that's the truth. And, you know, Jamie Pollard told a story that the morning of the spring game, Coach Campbell had invited all former players back. Mm-hmm. And he had a breakfast for us former players. And I thought, oh, that's kind of neat. He'll have us all. And Jamie Pollard spoke and Matt Campbell spoke. And what Matt Campbell did is he brought in every senior to be. And it was the day of the spring game, and he went right down the line. And there's all kinds of different legends. J.J. Moses, Seneca, Sage, going back to players in the 70s and 80s. Uh-huh. And he went right down the line, and he made every senior-to-be stand up in front of all those former players, announce their name, their position, and then Matt Campbell would give a 30 to 60-second little bio about that player. An accountability thing where it was like, mm-hmm. Hey, this is, he's going to be playing our weak side linebacker. This is what he's struggling with. And what you'll see today out there is, you know, he needs to get a little faster. He needs to work on this summer. And there was an accountability of putting those players in front of those seniors to be in front of former players. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that he has picked up through probably his Mount Union days, mm-hmm. where you have winning culture and there's accountability from players, former players, coaches. Like, it takes everybody pulling in the right direction.
How did he bring about the mentorship program that you were mentioning? You specifically are linked with a player.
Yep.
How did you get assigned? Do you know how you got linked to that player and how is that working or how did that get brought about?
You know, introduced it to us at the spring game. And Lou Ianni, Coach Lou, the yep. running backs coach,
yep. good guy.
He is kind of championing that. And he presented it. And Lindsey Long is the director of the Letter Winners Club. So Coach Lou and Lindsey Long are heading that up. And you signed up at the spring game at that breakfast if you were interested in mentoring a former player or a current player. And so I said, yeah, I'd love to. And we had our first mentor session actually last Friday. And they had us in. We had lunch with, and I don't know how they went about. Mm-hmm. I think they tried to pair it professionally now that I think of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, like, what that, and they're doing it for juniors to be, so that we can help them, you know, somebody that they can reach out to, you know, if they're struggling with something personally or academically. He just wants there to be an open door between former players and current players. And, you know, I got paired with Brian Peavy. So I had lunch with him, and I got his number, and we've texted back and forth here and there.
He's a stud.
He is. I really like him. He's a good kid, too.
Yeah.
And we'll try and stay in touch. It'll be tough this season, but mm-hmm. I think Campbell's goal is he does. It's not just lip service. When he tells a parent or a player, a potential recruit, I don't care about just for the next 4 years. I care about your success over the next 40 years. Yeah. And so. You know, when it comes time for Brian Peavy to, you know, interview for a job, to, yeah. you know, and open that door, if I can help some way and somehow, that's what Campbell's after for there.
Was that bridge to the former players lacking in the past?
Yeah, I mean, it's not nowhere near where it is now.
Yeah.
I think that that's also a function of Chizik 2 years, Rhodes, and then, you know, there was a little bit of a dark cloud there between McCarney era and Jamie Pollard, and that's kind of been whisked away now.
Yeah, totally.
Because Campbell is fully embracing it, and I think it's a passion of his, and I'm happy to see.
It's funny though, because I'm buddies with Matt Woodley, the energy coach, and like he's still angry over McCarney being fired. Like he's incredibly open about it too. So when you said that, like, that didn't surprise me. And it's refreshing to hear somebody just say it, because like I totally do understand that. I mean, McCarney built the program, and how there could have been hard feelings with guys who were part of that when he was shown the door.
Yep. And I think that it just goes to show Campbell's class, bringing McCarney back this spring and being the keynote speaker at the coaches clinic. McCarney's being inducted in the Hall of Fame this year. I'm excited for that.
What do you hope to see for this season? Not specifically wins, but program-wise, culture-wise. You're saying that Campbell believes that he can win at Iowa State. I believe that too, but we lost some games last year in really horrendous fashion. So as a former player, as a fan that goes to the games, what do you want to actually see on the field that's going to show you they've turned a corner here, and they may not get a ton of wins this year, but in the next few years, it's going to be good to watch Iowa State football?
Well, I think the first thing you're going to see is there's going to be some true freshmen that are playing this year. Mm-hmm. And I've been to practice twice now, and there's true freshmen that are not necessarily playing out of necessity, but because they're really good.
And they're standing out to you.
You can
see it.
Obviously we're light in some areas, but you know, we've got a slot receiver that's pushing Trevor Ryan for the starting role. Mm-hmm. We've got our best returning position player in Mike Warren. And there's a couple of running backs behind there that are really pushing Mike, and Mike might not get as many carries this year as he did last year. Not because Mike is not any good, but there's a couple of guys behind them that are true freshmen that are going to be talented. To answer your question, the thing that I'm a fan just like you at this point, right?
Yep.
You guys probably follow it and know it better than I do, but you know, I'm looking
great for sure.
Yeah, debatable.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just looking forward to seeing how this team plays, how hard they play, how involved they are into each other on the sidelines. You know, the last few years I sat behind the sidelines and I watched. You can tell whether players are fully engaged, and when that coach comes over and yells, whether that's fallen on deaf ears or that those players are fully engaged. And I think that, you know, that we might not see the finished product this year. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of players out there are going to be playing that maybe haven't bought fully into Matt Campbell. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think that it'll be interesting. It'll be a transition. We're going to have some young kids playing. But I think that the guys that are left are pulling in the same direction that Campbell wants to go.
I think the obvious one, too, and I think Gray would agree with this, is second half improvement. Mm. Like, are we going to see in games, whether we win or lose, adjustments, improvement, are they giving up, et cetera? Because that's a culture thing. Hey, we may lose today, but let's go down fighting.
That's right.
Hopefully.
Let's not lose 71-7.
Yeah.
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 Well, and did you see there's an ESPN article that came out about a week or two ago with Campbell where he says he's putting the team in difficult situations to see how they overcome adversity. Is that something you notice when you're at a couple of those practices? Were you seeing it put the players in a position where you said, man, I've never seen a coach do that before, but that, you know, that's unique. I see why he's doing that. Were you witness to any of this?
Yeah, I noticed. First thing I noticed out of practice, which I loved and I would have loved as a player, he's pumping music into that practice.
Yeah.
I told you guys that. I walked in the indoor a couple Fridays ago, and first of all, Campbell has invited any former player to come to any practice anytime. Oh. And I walk in, and they're like jamming boy bands, like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and
Dirty Pop.
And all this music is just all kind of all over. It started with, they call it Boy Band Friday, but wow, the tempo and the mood of everybody. You know, a lot of times in the grind of camp, it's like, we got to get through this.
How much time we have left in practice. Yeah.
I felt like when you hear Campbell say, practice is fast and furious, we're not going to keep you out here for a long time. It was a quick practice. You know, it was like 20 songs and we're
yeah.
And we're rolling. And to your point about the difficult position, I think, you know, I think that's what good coaches do. They prepare themselves for because difficult situations are going to happen in every game.
And we've seen it, especially the last couple of years. And it's easy when you're kind of in losing streaks, too, to all of a sudden, woe is me, when you get punched in the face, instead of stepping back up and saying, how are we going to react? You saw Iowa State hang their heads, and you said you're behind the bench. You probably saw it more than anyone else. Guys kind of coming off the field rather than talking themselves up, maybe head down. That's the one thing I want to see.
Yeah.
And shoot, even maybe not even second half adjustments. Don't crap the bed in the second half. Because we had two or three games won last year that we just crapped.
I think we lost some games last year because of coaching. I don't think there's any other way to say it. I mean, the players play. They're ultimately responsible for what's on the field. But it just seemed like we put them in some really bad positions. So hopefully this coaching staff is better at that. But the other thing I just read, it was a column on Cyclone Fanatic, I think, column or article, and it was about turnovers and how last year we stunk with turnovers, and they're specifically emphasizing that and how to punch the ball out and how to protect the ball and all that. You think about protecting the ball, you think about the K-State game and a late fumble, a couple late fumbles from us where we weren't protecting the ball as well as we could. But I think it's one game, but the Northern Iowa game's a hugely important game. Mm-hmm. 1-0 is a heck of a lot better than 0-1 when you're starting a season and you want to get the ball rolling. And again, it might be only a 3-4-5 win season, but I think we're going to learn a lot in that first game.
Yep.
And people shouldn't judge the season based on that, but just everything, what uniforms we're wearing and mentality and attitude and all of that stuff.
I'm excited to see that, you know, what, and I think you and I will, they have some players coming in.
Yeah.
They have a returning quarterback that rushed for like 1,300 yards, and I think they have a tailback that rushed for 1,200 yards, and he's a big back, almost like a David Johnson type size kid.
Yeah.
6'2", 230 or something like that. So they're, you and I will, you know, I'm hoping that we can beat them up front.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll see, right?
Maybe we'll beat them like we did your sophomore year. You guys just beat the hell out of that game.
They had a freshman quarterback that threw the ball to us like six times, maybe.
Was that the 45-0 game?
That was a Seneca. When all of a sudden we're like, oh, crap, we got a quarterback.
Shut him out.
We got somebody, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like I've said before, I've never been more excited for a season that I don't think we're going to win that many games.
Yep.
But it's about more than that at this point.
Well, let's put you on the record. What's your prediction for wins and losses?
I think we're going to win six games.
I love it. Yep. I love it. Yes.
All right. So okay, I'm not just going to let him gloss over that. All right? No way. What are the six?
Well, you and I, Iowa.
Kansas.
San Jose State.
Kansas. We'll give
you
those.
Notice I said Iowa.
I did.
I like it.
At their place.
I like Kansas and Kansas State. And then from there, I think a Texas Tech.
Yep.
Or a Baylor.
Baylor at home. Weaker. Yep. Baylor, obviously.
The thing that I worry about with our team this year is our depth and our a lot of these players don't know how to win.
Yeah.
How many years in a row have we had losing seasons, Gray?
What'd you say? I'm sorry.
How many? 3 years in a row.
3 years in a row. Yeah.
But three losing seasons in a row. As I reflect back on my career, and like when McCarney came in, Iowa State was really low.
Mm-hmm.
And it took him 4 or 5 years for him to teach, for the players to kind of learn how to win. I always say 99 was almost the best team I ever played on from a talent perspective.
Yeah.
Darren Davis, they were loaded. They had a bunch of JUCO guys. Went 4-7 that year. They mm-hmm. lost Major Applewhite by 1 point, 41-40. They were up Kansas State on a good Kansas State team, 28-7 at halftime. 99, they were loaded, but they didn't know how to quite win the game, close the deal, like you said last year. That team came out, and instead of finding a way to win, they found a way to lose. And so that's the thing that I think will be the toughest this year for Campbell, is to instill this winning, know how to win. A lot of these players we have don't. Now, our key positions, like quarterback, junior, I love that. I love that Lanning's a junior. We're going to have him, though. I wish he would have been playing all season last year.
Mm-hmm.
I like Joel Lanning a lot. I love the fact that he's a winner. He's tough. He'll do what it takes.
He won't shrink.
He'll truck a safety. He will not shrink in the moment. And last year was at TCU. He came in, threw a touchdown to Lazard and got
first
benched.
Played. Yeah. And then Rhodes kills him in the presser afterwards. Says that's a throw that Lazard probably shouldn't make.
Touchdown to our best player on the field.
Yeah. you recruit this big stud who's 6'5". He throws the ball to him. He scores a touchdown, and you tell me he shouldn't throw him that ball?
Let me just jump in. That was the moment that Rhodes lost me.
Oh, my gosh.
Was that press conference. Even after – there were other things that had happened where I could kind of still, like – because I liked Paul and I wanted him to do well, I could still kind of just be like, oh, well, you know. When Lanning threw that touchdown, got benched for it, and then was – basically criticized in postgame, like, I was done, man.
Wow. It's unbelievable. I remember the first time I saw Joel Lanning, I officiated high school football for a few years,
okay.
4 or 5 years. And when Joel Lanning was a sophomore at Ankeny, I officiated a game at Waukee, and I'm out there in warm-ups, back judge, and I'm watching, you know, I'm always watching the quarterbacks and receivers and warm-ups and everything, and I'm like, this guy can throw the ball. And they're like, yeah, he's only a sophomore. I'm like, wow. So you can just tell when a player has something special. And I like Joel's. I mean, he's just a tough winner.
I know something somebody told me, somebody's very close to Joel is telling me this about him, that he likes about him, is the fact that, like, Joel, he's constantly moving on. He's constantly looking forward. Like, yep. If Joel gets done with a practice, he's, what are we doing for dinner? If he gets done with dinner, okay, what are we doing tonight? And – this guy was telling me he thinks that because you need to have a short memory as a quarterback at that level, and that's one of the reasons why, like, if he does throw a pick in practice, he's very quick to forget about it and he's able to move on. And just being able to talk to Joel as much as I have, I totally see that.
He's got a little gunslinger in him.
Oh, yeah. See, you should love that. Because
I love gunslingers,
like,
man.
Gray, it's funny. Like, you talk to him about, like, his favorite quarterbacks. They're all the same guy.
Probably Favre.
Yeah. They're all alpha males with huge arms who aren't the best decision makers. Like,
But they're not going to shrink. They might make the wrong play. They might mess up. But at least you know they're going for it.
Your boy Cutler shrunk a few times. But
Cutler's not my boy. I just love watching him sling the rock.
He was your boy.
You know, he had a good year last year, guys. Keller had a good year.
There's ups and downs to every football game, and interceptions are gonna happen, especially if you're trying to make the throw like Lanning does. So, a short memory, get out there, next play, yep. Throw a touchdown, forget about it.
I gotta go, but do you want to tell your neighbor goodbye? I'm gonna pass the headset back to Mark.
Oh, jeez.
What a janky production this has been. Jeez. Figured out, Williams.
Otherwise, it's been a great podcast.
You know what? I blew my window the other day, by the way. Kate, of course, like we already talked about, she watches out the window for Lane. She comes and says, Lane's out there playing catch with the kids, with his sons.
Why aren't you doing that?
Well, no, and I said, she's like, you should go out there and play. You'd have a chance to play catch with one of Iowa State's all-time greatest receivers. And I said, maybe. So I missed the window. But next time you're throwing the pigskin.
We're out there quite a bit.
If you need someone to throw you the rock, you let me know.
We kind of take over the cul-de-sac a little bit. I don't think a few of the neighbors in there love it. But
Lane's kids, by the way, are going to play football. He can speak for his own children, but they're like bombing around the cul-de-sac on their bikes and stuff. They just have this, you can tell, especially compared to my kid, okay? I got a great kid, but he's a little soft so far. Lane's kids are just like, who cares? Dude, if I fall off the bike, I fall off the bike, kind of. You can tell they got that football mentality already.
I was over there for 15 minutes, and your son picked up this huge boulder of a rock. I mean, this thing had to weigh almost half of what he weighed.
Yeah.
Picked it up and just chucked it right into the bush, just like it was.
By the way, I didn't tell Lane this, but I got a tattletale on his youngest kid because it was funny. So I was watching him, and Lane's got two sons, and they were over playing with Seton in our backyard, and we back up to a pond on Otter Creek, and the tennis ball they were playing with went in there, so they're like waiting for it to kind of float to the side to get it. And then one of Lane's kids, he can figure out which one. The pond is marked with red golf stakes because it's a hazard, right? he pulls a red stake out of the grass and chucks it into the pond. And I go, I don't think you're supposed to do that. He didn't seem to care.
No.
But I'm like, all right, whatever.
I'm guessing that was Kale.
Yeah. you're right on that. But I thought it was
named
funny.
After Kale Sanderson?
Yep.
Oh, nice.
Spelled the same. Yep.
Love it. Love it. So, hey, don't go home and whip your kid. I thought it was funny. Anyway, thanks for coming, man.
Yeah, thanks for the invite.
This was fun.
I enjoyed it.
We weren't too hard on you in the 2003 season.
It was good.
Yeah.
All right, Gray, you want to sign us off here?
Well, how do we sign off, Williams?
See you later,
See you later. Thanks to the Charterhouse Real Estate for providing the podcast.
Later, guys.
See ya.
Thank you. See ya.